Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
What a week in the NFL. Welcome in. I am Doug Kazarian. This is the latest Behind the Bets podcast. Obviously, we do college football on the Wednesday, so go check that out for October 3rd. This is October 4th with the NFL content. John Murray's going to join me, and Mike Clay will return. Did well last week on the podcast with his fantasy analysis, so we're going to use him to break down the prop bets that jump out to him on the Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night games. So a lot to get through with Mike Clay. He'll join us at the end, but John Murray's coming up, and hey, we're both winners on Baby Bankroll Bonanza, and we have a sizable wager coming up on this week's Baby Bankroll Bonanza, the almost triple the highest bet so far coming in. So a lot of action right now, straight ahead on the Behind the Bets podcast.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
A hot tub in Vegas. Interesting.
Been some interesting times out here over the years. I can't argue with that.
John Murray back with us here to talk a little NFL. And, you know, I don't know why we're ever surprised with the NFL. It is such – I know Zigzag is reserved for the NBA betting world in the postseason, but it really is – we've got two undefeateds left. That's it.
Yeah, and Kansas City, very fortunate to be undefeated. I hope that I have an opportunity to gush about Patrick Mahomes on this show.
I'm not stopping you.
That guy is – we'll get into him, but man, that guy is special.
Well, let's start there because the point spread had some interesting movement. We talked last week on the pod. I thought it would go up, and I was wrong, obviously. I thought it would close maybe six just based on the Chiefs' love, the powerful offense, and what they've done the first few weeks going into that game. But I'm assuming the Sharps kept that number low?
I did too. Doug, I thought it was going to go up as well. And I said that, I think, on this show. I thought that line was going to go higher, but the Sharps just wouldn't allow it. There was so much sharp money that came in on Denver, plus five, even down to plus four. We had one of our sharper NFL bettors come in, I think on Sunday night, he took four. So the Sharps just would not let that number get any higher, despite the public, of course, they were all over Kansas City. Now, we got lucky on that game because our biggest bet of the week on either side, we had a guy laid 4.5 on the Chiefs, so he lost. And the game went under, which was a big deal for us here at the Westgate. There was a lot of over money in that game.
Yeah, strange game with the Chiefs stalling in the first half on some drives, had to settle for field goals. I thought the biggest disappointment, if you were a Chiefs backer, maybe, was the fact that they had two plays, separate situations, third and long on the 41, and they didn't try to get 5 yards for a field goal. It was like third and like 11. And it was just a really strange situation to come away with no points. I believe there was a punt return to the 41, and the Chiefs never moved the ball. I just think you got to get to the 34-ish and get that field goal, get those 3 points. I'm all for being aggressive, but I think it was foolish play calling, not passive play calling.
I think that with their offense, they're thinking touchdown all the time. They're not worried about field goals. But I know what you're saying, but I think they're more going down the field. They're looking to score touchdowns. And with a quarterback with Mahomes' arm, I can see why.
I guess. But how about if Keenum hits, was it Thomas down the sideline on the cover two?
Yeah. And here's a question I have for you about that play. Did Keenum overthrow Thomas, or did Thomas stop his route short?
It's a good question because we put a lot of the interceptions over the course of football on the quarterback, but sometimes the receivers run the wrong routes. I think I feel like the throw was high and Keenum missed him.
I thought so, too, when I first watched it, but you know, I watched a replay that kind of made me think maybe Thomas stopped short on that route. The old Frank Costanza, he stopped short. I thought he stopped a little short there, man, because it's hard for me to believe that Keenum would miss that throw by that much.
It's hard to believe?
It is hard to believe, yeah. I mean, I think that some of that was on Demaryius Thomas, but we'll never know.
Perhaps. I don't know enough, and I don't, you know, and obviously quarterbacks aren't going to throw people under the bus. It was a wild game, and 3.5's covered, which was not looking good when they were down 10 in the second half. I thought maybe even the 4 and 5 would be covered because if the Chiefs kicked a field goal to force OT, and then who knows what happens. I thought there was some interesting stuff on the horizon. How about the Steelers-Ravens? Where did the Pittsburgh fall now on the power ratings for the house?
Yeah, Pittsburgh now, they've come all the way down. I mean, they're only a 3-point favorite at home against Atlanta this week, and Atlanta's a team that's just dealing with all kinds of injuries to their defense. I think it says a lot about the Steelers right now that they're only a field goal favorite in that game with their backs to the wall. I mean, the Steelers really need to win this game. They're looking up at a 3-1 Baltimore team that's already beat them head-to-head, a 3-1 Cincinnati team that's a big favorite this week. Pittsburgh really needs to win this game. And right now, it's hard to have any faith in that team, especially that defense.
Really strange game. Baltimore about to go up 21-3, fumbles, Steelers go down, and the 2-point conversion tie things up. You think you're in for another epic game between these two rivals, and then Pittsburgh never scored again, and Baltimore just sort of dominated. They were like toying with Pittsburgh. But Big Ben just looked off the entire game. The team
Baltimore
looks off.
Baltimore, very impressive defensively, and they get Jimmy Smith back this week, probably their top corner. So you've got to really look at Baltimore as a potential sleeper in the AFC. I know Kansas City looks like a powerhouse, but I think the AFC is still pretty wide open, and Baltimore has every chance to get themselves into the mix.
Yeah, Kansas City's run defense is going to prevent them from running away with the conference. I just think they're going to get blasted a couple of times, especially later in the season. Weather gets changes. Not that Mahomes is not excellent, but there'll be times where he's really off, and you know the wet. Like I said, the weather, and then some tip play. I mean, that I thought Kansas City looked really sluggish in themselves. Maybe it was the altitude, but they looked sluggish themselves in the first half.
That was, I think, to me at least, that was Mahomes' most impressive performance, because in the previous three games, he had receivers pretty much wide open all over the place. Now, he was making every throw, so he gets the credit, but on Monday night, he had to improvise for a lot of those plays. He was rolling out of the pocket. He was making throws on the run. A lot of that was just him on his own against that pretty stout Denver defense on the road in Mile High. Very, very impressive for the young quarterback there.
That's a great point. It was definitely his most challenging situation, and he rose to the occasion. So being most impressed is certainly valid. Now, look, a lot of the favorites covered on Sunday. I was thinking it'd be a bad day for the house because you got New England covering. You got the Jacksonville Jaguars covering touchdown-ish spread. The Packers covering 9 points or so. So a lot of those typical favorites when that 7-10 range covered. Also, the teasers all paid. How did the house do on Sunday?
You know, we came out a little bit ahead, but our biggest decision was actually the Raiders-Browns game. We needed the Browns huge in
that's
game.
Right.
And I didn't agree with the overturned spot call that gave the Raiders the ball back. Now, you got to blame a lot of it on Baker Mayfield. I think he fumbled twice inside his own 50 in the second half. So he deserves his share of the blame for those fumbles, but I thought he did enough to win that game. I thought that was a first down and should have ended the game right there.
Yeah, strange call. Strange situation. I still don't really understand exactly what happened.
Tough to overturn that call, I think, Doug. I was pretty surprised by that. And the people in the sports book disagreed with me. They erupted, and we had a lot of Raider money on Sunday.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's because they erupted. They disagreed with you because they had all the all the money.
Yeah, no, the Raiders have a good fan base out here already, and they were certainly backing their team on Sunday. We needed the Browns big time. That was our biggest decision of the week.
But the house still managed to avoid disaster.
Yeah, we did pretty well in the early games. We won a lot on the Houston game against Indianapolis, and we had a few other games that went our way. So overall, we had a good week.
So sharps were spot on a couple games, but I imagine that last Sunday is a great example of why you need sharp action to fall on the Jets, to fall on the Dolphins, and those types of teams.
And the Bills, too. Bills were another one. I'll tell you a game that we did do well on was Philadelphia against Tennessee. Tennessee winning that game. Philadelphia was a cheap road favorite. You know how the public loves those.
Mm-hmm.
And Tennessee was able to win that game outright. big reason for that, Mike Vrabel being very aggressive. You know how I feel about aggressive play callers, Doug.
So let's talk about that. It was about a 50-yarder or so to tie the game. Vrabel says, let's go for it.
Yeah.
And I think some of that, you know, factoring in the decision-making is the potential to miss a field goal, right? It wasn't a 35-yarder. Sure. But he went for the win, which I was okay with. I thought it was a little dicey, but I was like, well, it's not automatic to make the field goal. Now, no one really talked about this, or at least I didn't see people talking about this. Arizona had a 3rd and 5 around the 2-minute warning, and they had Josh Rosen like run a stupid run ball. You know, they handed it to Johnson instead of trying to throw for a first down, then chew the clock all the way down, get a shorter field goal attempt, and not let Seattle have the ball. They play too passively, and I was screaming at the TV. But Dawson misses the field goal, and then Seattle has a short field for field goal range. Now, they play too conservatively, but Vrabel did this on 4th down, not 3rd down.
Yeah, and if you're Arizona, you're 0-3, you're not going anywhere this year anyway. What is the point of being that conservative there? I don't understand that at all. You gotta give your team a better chance. These teams get into field goal range, what they think is field goal range, and they bring in the oars, and it costs them wins. And we saw that with the Cardinals on Sunday. And really, we see it all the time, actually. But why not, like, I think you just said it perfectly, but why not go for that first down and then be able to bleed the clock all the way down, you know, to the end of the game and kick a field goal as time expires? Then the worst case scenario is you go to overtime.
Right, and if Seattle's out of timeouts and it's like a minute 30, you're like, all right, well, at least we're protecting ourselves full 40 seconds. But then Seattle still had a timeout, I think, and then they would just, like, the cost-benefit wasn't there for them to run the play. And I, to your point, I get what you're saying. They have nothing to play. But they did want to win, right? They had the rookie and all that. Like, your locker room does need a W here and there. So
I agree, but I thought that was the best way
for them to win. Like, that's my point.
You know, I said last week I think that Arizona coach is in over his head, and nothing changed this past Sunday to make me go back on that. I think that guy is just in over his head right now.
How about Frank Wright? You mentioned it on the College Pod. You liked the decision to go for it.
I did like the decision. I like that he went for the win, didn't go for the tie. I think it sends the right message to his team. I think the players are going to love that. He's a new coach. I think it sends them the right message. I agree with the decision. I know it didn't work out, but I like the decision, and I'm in favor of it, and I'm in favor of Frank Reich as a coach. I like what I see from him so far.
So I agree that the locker room component, the message it sends the team is important, and I think especially when you're a rookie coach, and have that new relationship with players. That I'm okay with. I thought it was a little reckless because there was no guarantee they'd score if they got it, whereas I'm a big fan of going for it around midfield because you're essentially I need one first down for a field goal after you get the conversion, obviously the field. I just thought while no one wants to play for ties, you're basically losing the game if you don't convert a 4th and 4. So I think given that they had struggled, and I think Hilton was hurt, right? T.Y. Hilton was hurt.
He got hurt, but he came back into the game.
Okay. I didn't like it at the time, even if they had gotten it. I thought it was a little bit too much of a gamble. But we're starting to see it. Look, Andy Reid on Monday night on his own, 34-yard line, went for it, 4th and short.
Went for it on 4th and 1. I love it. I love it.
I do, too. People think I was crazy when I'm saying this stuff the last 10 years. It's finally, we're seeing it done.
And what happened? They converted the first down. They ended up kicking a field goal on that drive. Still 3 more points than they would have gotten if they punted, Doug. I mean, it's clearly, I think it's clearly the way to go. And you want to talk about bringing in the oars. Bill O'Brien on Sunday, they got up 28-10 about halfway through the third quarter, and he just acted like, okay, the game's over. We're going to salt it away on offense, go into the prevent defense. You cannot do that in 2018. You can't just stop trying offensively with an 18-point lead midway through the third quarter. This is the modern NFL. You've got to keep trying to score, or you're going to end up in overtime or losing. He ended up in overtime. He got away with it, but you can't do that. And I don't know if Bill O'Brien is capable of learning lessons, but if he is, he should have learned from Sunday's game.
I don't know what's going on anymore. These teams are so hard to figure out. It really is all about the spot. Like I thought Jacksonville was in a great spot last week. New England, obviously, off back-to-back losses. But, you know, some of these other teams, you really have to bet the spot. You can't do anything else. It's just too hard.
NFL is really tough. Picking NFL on Wednesday is really tough. But I do it for Kai. That's why I'm here, to support the family. Although I did win this past week. I had a dime on the Texans. Easy win.
So we'll get it. Yeah, exactly. You had the plus one. I will give you that. So you didn't.
I wanted it to end in a tie. You know I wanted them to miss that field goal.
I didn't want to text you because I knew you were stressing, but
I wanted it to end in a tie. It would have been so much funnier to win the plus one bet with a 34-34 tie. I think that's what the score would have been. So 31-31, whatever. It would have been more fun if it ended in a tie.
I agree. We'll get into all this, the drama, the baby bankroll bonanza. And I will say we've won our big bets. Like, that's what's most remarkable. We've won all of our four-figure bets, I should say. Okay, so we have a game. Let's talk about this card. Indian New England. Ah, the Patriots are back. They get Edelman, Josh Gordon, more reps. Pats are back to being the Pats, and they get one of their rivals in town on a short week, and you're going over double digits here.
It's a tough spot for the Colts, Doug. You're talking about a team that played on the in overtime this past Sunday. Got to be a pretty back-breaking loss. They basically played five quarters on Sunday. Now they've got to turn around, short week, and go on the road against the Patriots. It's a really tough spot for the Colts on Thursday night.
We had a loyal listener of the pod ask us about something. I think now's a good time to talk about this. And please, if you guys have questions that you want answered on the podcast, reach out at DougESPN on Twitter, and I'll put it together, and maybe we'll create a segment out of it. But he asked about middles, and that was something I wanted to discuss. And this is a tease for Baby Bankroll Bonanza, Murray. But so basically, setting up a middle or having a middle is you have a position. You have a chance to land the game between two things. So if let's say the line here is 10 with New England, or 10.5 in this case, and if you want to grab Indianapolis at another point in the game, plus 14 or 16 or 15.5, whatever it is, you have a chance if it lands in the middle. Now, you know, sometimes people do this with line movement. We talked about it week one with the Rams and Raiders, right? The line opened 4, closed 6.5. If you were ahead of the line move, you could have laid 4, grabbed 6.5. And, you know, assuming 110 on both sides, risk 10% to land the middle, and then that's 20-1 odds, essentially. Am I missing anything, Murray?
No. Keep going.
Well, think about it. The 20-1, everyone gets lost when I try to explain that. It's you're laying 110 to win 100 on one side, and on the other side, you're laying 110 to win 100. So the worst thing can happen is you lose $10. The best you can happen, or you can have happen, is win 200. So that's risking 10 to win 200. Now, you're risking if you do it live betting and things like that. But there isn't, you know, if you don't do it before the game, like in that rare case where the line moves drastically in the Rams-Raiders opening night Monday night football game, you're absorbing risk, and it's a dangerous game to play, but it also can be very rewarding.
It can be, and you're risking usually relatively small amounts in terms of your bankroll if all you're risking is the juice. So we see a lot of guys doing that, and what they're doing is they're playing our number against other books around town. And usually the more successful players are not doing a lot of minus 110s, too. They're taking even money on a side or maybe minus 105 on a side to limit the amount of juice they're giving up.
And we talked about the Golden Knights, right? Like their season prop for the points totals. You guys are at 100.5, and other places are at 97.5. So you could literally have a three-point middle for a season prop bet going into the season.
Yeah, we see a lot of guys do that. Now, the only difference there is now you're talking about having your money held until April.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, usually those are guys that have bigger bankrolls. They don't mind playing for those middles and having their money held for 6 or 7 months as opposed to just doing it for a game on Saturday or Sunday.
And we see this around the Super Bowl with props, right? You can go do it in yards, like over 2 field goals, under 2.5. You're trying to side a prop bet there. You can do yardage of Tom Brady's passing yards in the Super Bowl, over 271.5, under 285.5. And you have a 14-yard middle. And to your point that you said it's not always minus 110, sometimes the juice is really favorable. And, I mean, that's basically a crash course on middling, but one thing to keep in mind when you do it going, you know, some people like to play out of the halftime or at halftime to play out of their original bet. Sometimes it makes more sense just to continue sweating out your original bet and not give up your advantageous position.
I think so. I think if you've got a big lead, you should just let it go. I think you're getting too cute trying to chase for a middle. If you're in a very advantageous position, I think you should just let your bet go.
Right. So my rule of thumb is treat the second bet as a separate bet. Treat it as, I like this just as much as the first one, and then you're going for a middle. If you don't want to throw away good bets, because we all know there's a lot of bets you make that never give you a chance to make a middle, that are just really bad bets, and then that way you don't want to give up all your good positions.
It's been known to happen, unfortunately, even to the best of us.
All right, so just keep that in mind for New England, minus 10.5 as we look ahead to baby bankroll bonanza. So some other interesting lines that jump out to me, Baltimore at Cleveland, and this is a impressive Ravens team only laying a field goal here.
Yeah, well, this number actually opened even cheaper. We started this thing at Baltimore minus 1.5 on Sunday. Now, obviously, that was before the Sunday night football game. And then Baltimore had a very impressive showing on the road in Pittsburgh. Now they're minus 3, minus 120 in Cleveland. You got to think Cleveland is a little down after that loss to the Raiders this past week.
This will be a nice test for the Ravens. You want to be the class of the AFC? Let's see it. Go prove it. Go prove it.
It's a good test, and you know, I think, like we've talked about, the Browns' offense is hugely improved with Baker Mayfield in there. But, man, their defense finally looked a little vulnerable on Sunday. The Raiders were moving the ball up and down the field. I've been praising the Browns' defense all season. They did not look good on Sunday in Oakland, to say the least.
No, they didn't. One thing I was surprised at is all the Giant money last weekend against the Saints. I get the 3.5. I get all that. But this New Orleans offense in this day and age is still pretty potent. And here the Giants are getting a 7 now at Carolina.
It seems like the sharps have come in on the Giants every week this season, Doug. I don't know if we've had a week yet this year where the so-called sharp money was on the New York Giants. And I think that they'll probably take 7 again this week against Carolina. Carolina is coming off their bye week. They had a bye last week, so they should be pretty rested for this game. And I think Carolina is kind of a forgotten team in the NFC. We saw some really sharp players bet futures on them before the season started. They win on Sunday, they'll be 3-1. I think people are really kind of not giving them enough credit for how good they are.
I agree. I do like this Carolina team a little bit to be friskier than people expect. This is an interesting game because it's a worse spot for Denver, but I'm not sure I could back the Jets in this situation. Jets are now favored, and you have your house has a firm opinion on this game compared to the rest of town.
Jets minus 1 here in this spot. It's a tough spot for Denver. That had to be a very emotional loss for them on Monday night at home against the Chiefs. Now they go on the road against the New York Jets. I'm seeing mostly ones out there, at least in Las Vegas right now.
I thought I'm seeing 2.5 at your place, no?
No, we have Jets minus 1.
My apologies. My screen is
Come down. It's come down from it was Jets minus 2.5, Doug.
That's remarkable.
Jets minus 1.
That's against this defense, right? The Denver defense. I mean, the spot is horrible for the Broncos, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Why did it come down? You followed the market, or did you guys take bets on it?
No, this was a situation where we just went with the market. There's very little money on this game, and this will probably be one of the least bet games on Sunday. It's buried in the deck at 10 a.m. with all these other higher profile games. I don't see this game generating a ton of action.
What games do you see generating a lot of action?
Well, the Rams at the Seahawks. I bet you we'll have a few bets come in on the Rams. We already had a sharp player took plus 7 even money on Seattle. That should be probably the most bet game of the week, I would think. Jacksonville, Kansas City is a very high profile game. There's been money on both sides of that game, but certainly we'll see a lot of money on that game. And Philadelphia against Minnesota. Right. That's a NFC Championship game rematch. Minnesota needs to win this game. If they lose on Sunday, they're going to be 1-3-1, and they're going to be really behind the eight ball in that NFC North with Green Bay and Chicago ahead of them.
Yeah, that division. And I guess Tampa's still in the mix here. Let's not completely sleep on them.
Detroit's is the fourth team out there. But
excuse me, I'm sorry. you're right. I'm thinking the old NFC.
The NFC North.
Central,
yeah.
Right?
yeah, the NFC Central. No, that's true. Yeah, I think Philadelphia – the NFC East is a little bit more beatable than the NFC North. That's why I think the Vikings really need this game more than Philadelphia. The team that really has the advantage, though, is the Rams, Doug, because the rest of that NFC West is a mess with injuries, and the Cardinals just aren't very good. The Rams really have pole position to get that one seed, because you got to think these teams in the South and the North are going to be beating each other up all year while the Rams just coast through that NFC West.
There's a prop in town as whether a team will go undefeated. I think the Rams have a legitimate shot. I think there are 4 losable games on the Rams schedule, and I do not think Seattle's one of them.
Well, at Seattle, although Seattle did just lose Earl Thomas, it's a lot to ask of that Seattle secondary to keep the Rams in check without Earl Thomas back there, but it should be a tough spot. It's never easy to win on the road against the Seahawks.
They went 4-4 at home last year. They beat Dallas because Earl Thomas had two picks, and that was a Dallas team that's gone has trouble scoring. They've gone under like 11 of 12 games. Like I don't understand how, like the Legion of Boom is done.
Yeah, those guys are all. I think they all got injured on the road against the Cardinals. Actually,
like, and this team barely won at Arizona, a team that the Rams nuked at home. Like I don't understand how people want to grab plus 7 here. I mean, I get it, but I think you're again. This goes back to what we talked about with Alabama. There are just other ways to go about effectively making money than betting against the Rams on a one-score game.
Yeah. I think the Rams have shown the NFL the way. The way to go is to have a young, offensive-minded play caller that understands math and a grizzled veteran defensive coordinator. And the Bears kind of have that with Matt Nagy and Vic Fangio. And they're already 3-1, but that's the way to go, man. Just get that offensive-minded guy calling the plays on offense and a grizzled veteran DC like Wade Phillips on the other side of the ball. The Rams look really good right now.
I just think they're so good right now, and I get the logic. I just think it's an archaic handicapping approach to be wanting to take Seattle there. I just don't think that's the right. I don't think they're the right team. I don't think they're even close to a playoff team. And I know the place will be rocking and all that. I just think the Rams are up for the challenge. 10 days, like I just think they're too good. They're just much better.
Well, we saw a sharp group took Seattle plus 7 even. And took Dallas plus 3.5, minus 110. I'm not going to play either of those games in the Bonanza. I don't really like either of those sides. And frankly, I'm not sure I can sit through that Dallas-Houston game, Doug. That sounds like a painful watch.
I don't know, man. I like watching Watson play. I mean, I get everything you're saying. This Houston team is underdelivered, so I don't know. But what about the Monday night game? You got Washington at New Orleans here.
That should be a thrilling game. I'm going to that game. I'll be in New Orleans for that game.
There
Washington,
you go.
I'll be down there in the Big Easy. The Redskins, a 6.5-point dog on the road. Redskins coming off their bye week. And, you know, the Redskins under Jay Gruden have been very good as a road underdog, Doug. That's been the spot where they've really excelled. They've been horrible as a home favorite, but they've been good on the road as a dog. This could be a good spot to get involved on Washington against the Saints.
I have a feeling the house will need the Skins badly.
I think that's a pretty safe bet. Yeah, no, there will be a lot of teasers and moneyline parlays closing with the Saints. But, you know, New Orleans really hasn't played well at home this season. They were very fortunate against Cleveland. They got crushed by the Buccaneers in week one. So I think this is a decent spot to get behind the Redskins. I was hoping for 7. I was really hoping for 7, and there was some 7 out there earlier in the week. But right now we're dealing the game at 6.5.
Well, I was just about to ask you, what do you think this line will go to? Because it's right there near such a key number.
You'll probably see some 7s on this game. But unless the Sharps get involved on Washington the way they did on Denver last week, the Sharps just would not let that Denver line get any higher than what it was.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. We glossed over it. Jacksonville, Kansas City, Chiefs a firm 3. This looks like a tough spot for the Chiefs, all things considered.
It is tough. They get the short week, tough win on Sunday. Jacksonville, an easy win against the New York Jets last Sunday. Can we talk about Todd Bowles at all? Can we talk about him kicking a field goal? I think it was 25-3, and he kicked a field goal, the New York Jets coach.
Where were we in the game?
It was in the second half. I don't remember all the details. I think my head exploded when I saw him kicking a field goal, so that's why my memory is a little hazy. You know, I praised him last year. I thought the Jets really overachieved last year. But if he's going to start kicking field goals with a 25-3 deficit to cut it to 19, I'm going to turn on him very quickly, Doug.
What about Doug Marrone going for 2 in the final couple minutes? Like that is some Urban Meyer-esque moves there.
I don't really have a problem with it. I mean, I guess there's no need for it, but he's just playing the math. I mean, I understand what he's doing there.
Dude, are you kidding me?
It just doesn't bother me that much. I mean, I think these teams should
I'm
just
not bothered, per se, like, because I think it's adult football. But, like, you're telling me they're playing the math?
Well, it put it up to 21, right?
No,
I know what you're saying. I get what you're saying. There was no need for it at all, but I'm a big fan of keeping your foot on the...
There were 25 seconds left in the game.
I didn't know it was it, that late.
It would have put them up 21. They failed. They won by 19.
I thought there were a few minutes left.
No, all 25 right, seconds.
25. Okay. All right. I'll take it back. But I am a big favorite, a big fan of keeping your foot on the gas. But I didn't know that they were under a minute. So. Well, at 10 a.m., I'm watching the games that are competitive. You know, that game had long been over.
Right. I mean, okay, look, if there is seconds, a coaching okay. philosophy there, like, hey, we got to – like back when the Patriots won – all 16 games, and Belichick was accused of running up the score against Joe Gibbs, I believe it was, in the second half. I actually defended it because I think what Belichick was trying to do was play full four quarters because they were blowing out everyone, and they had the Colts coming up, and their team, they're like, their starters hadn't even played in the fourth quarter most in a majority of the game. So if there is a coaching concept there, I'm all for it. It's whatever. Like, grow up. Like, these NBA guys who complain all the time and get, like, their, you know, all – been out of shape. It's like, just grow up. It's a basket. Like, if the guy's chucking a three, who cares? You know, like, stop about this morality and this sportsmanship thing when you're actually trapping them at half court anyway. You can't have it both ways, right? So I'm all for if there's a logical, but like going for two, like, guys could get hurt too. That's why I think it's a little silly as well.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. And I didn't know. Why did they even score a touchdown with 25 seconds left? Like, I didn't see the end of that
game.
He
said he was going with a chart or so. It was TJ Yeldon had a touchdown, but he was going for the chart.
I mean, I was watching some of the ends of the competitive games, like the Bengals-Falcons game and the Houston game.
Right.
25 seconds, I agree with you. I'm with you on that. That's pretty bad.
All right, what do you say we play a little?
I like Doug Marrone. I like Doug Marrone. I think he's a good coach.
I agree. What do you say we play a little Bonanza?
I'm good. Let's do it.
All right, we'll do that straight ahead.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
As I mentioned earlier, we keep hitting our big bets. You got there with the Texans. We touched on it earlier. You had the plus one. Didn't need the Frank Reich bonehead play. But then again, if he converts it, you're sweating that one out.
Very true, and I blame Bill O'Brien for all of that. He took his foot off the gas, up 28-10. You just cannot do that, Doug. Now, Doug Marrone going for two with 25 seconds left is not the same thing, but I'm always in favor of continuing to try to score and making sure that you don't blow a big lead.
And then you push the Vikes plus seven, luckily, with the missed chip shot for the Rams that kept the game at 10, so the Vikings were able to kick a field goal down 10 on fourth down rather than trailing by 13 and maybe having to force a shot in the end zone. Either way, it gets there. So you are on the – you're in the black for the first time this season. I have you at plus 750.
I should be plus 750. I know I was down 250, won the 1,000 on the Texans. Kai's got to be getting nervous here.
Kai, how do you feel, man? Your kid going to get some start getting a job soon?
Yeah, man. Palms are a little sweaty, man. I was looking forward to the double stroller, so I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
He might have to get a job as soon as he turns one.
Yeah.
Get him to work there. But we'll see. There's still a long season ahead, Kai. There's a lot of chances to lose some money.
Not too surprisingly, volume was not the answer for me. Of my four plays at $300, I went 1-3. That's for a net of minus 690, but fortunately I pressed, had the biggest bet of the season that hit with ease, the teaser, Jags and Pats, 1,500. So now 810 net last week, that brings me to 1,660 for the season.
Wow. You're up there, man. You're in a stratosphere. I still got time though, DK. I'm still coming for you.
You should almost just play prevent and let me shoot myself in the foot. One thing I will say, the whole premise of this bankroll concept, which is allow us to bet big if we needed to, teasers, things like that, and I think it's working that way, right? Like our big bets, rather than your contest that you guys are famously for, like, you know, in the Houston would have just been one win for you, rather as it's your biggest bet.
It's a truer test if you are able to weight your plays, because I don't think that you like every play exactly the same as every other play. So it's a truer test if you can weight your picks.
That's certainly the philosophy. Well, I'm up overall, and I won more money last week, so I'm on the tee box regardless.
Fair enough. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to take the Vikings plus three. And I think it's a must-win, like you mentioned. And that's plus three flat, right?
Yeah, we got plus three even money here at the Westgate on that game.
Okay, so I'm going to take that for 300.
You always lead off with the smaller bet.
I like to build up.
You're trying to shake me, throw me off my game, I think, is the only read I can get on that. But I've only got three plays this week. They're all going to be for the same, all for 500. The first one I'll give you, Miami plus 6.5 on the road against Cincinnati. I think this number is a little inflated. Miami, the really bad loss to the Patriots last week. The Bengals, the great win on the road against Atlanta. Atlanta was missing everybody defensively in that game.
Yeah, no, that's a solid play there. I'm going to go the Rams minus 7. I talked about it earlier in the pod. Obviously, I got to back it up. I'm going to do a dime.
It's minus 7, minus 110 here at the Westgate, sir.
Okay, good. Okay, that's my second play.
Let me stick in the NFC West. I'm going to take the Arizona Cardinals plus 4 on the road against the 49ers. I've been very critical of Steve Wilks, the Cardinals coach, but I think this number is too high, being over the 4. I'm sorry, over the 3, excuse me, with C.J. Beathard at quarterback for the 49ers. And I like Josh Rosen. I think Rosen's going to be a good player for the Cardinals. So give me Arizona plus 4 for 500.
I like that play. I was thinking about it. And Mackenzie Kramer, one of our researcher extraordinaires, he writes stuff for the .com as well with the Eliminator stuff. 49ers, 0-10 against the spread in their last 10 games as a home favorite. So you are fading that. Yeah.
I'm going with the team that I've been – the two coaches that I've made fun of all year are Wilks and Bill O'Brien. Last week I went with Bill O'Brien, and this week I'm going with Wilks.
Okay, so we touched on it earlier in the podcast, and I'm going to set up a middle. So we're going to have a Twitter bet later during the game on Thursday night that I'm excited about. So what's your Indianapolis New England line?
Right now we got New England minus 10.5 at home against the Colts.
Okay. I'm going to go $4,000 on the Patriots minus 10.5, and I plan to play back Indy during the end game and hopefully set up a middle there.
$4,000. Wow.
That's what I told you. It'd probably be better if you just play prevent. My thought process on this is I don't see the Colts going in and leading wire to wire like we saw the Lions do to the Patriots at home on a Sunday night. I think the Patriots will jump on them, and you're going to have some wiggle room there on a backdoor cover. I think New England will be up 7-0 or something. I think you're going to be able to get 14.5 at some point during the game. Now, I'm obviously risking the 4,400, and I'll take it on the chin in my imaginary bankroll. But I think we're going to be able to play this back and have a shot at winning $8,000. Or maybe I'll play back half of it and save it for later in the game. Again, this is bankroll management. I think we're going to have some fun. I want to do this on an island game. It'll be fun. And, you got to go big. You got to go big on this baby bankroll, man.
I'm flying back to Virginia tomorrow morning, and my plan for Thursday night was to have dinner with my mom. Just kind of relax, spend some time with my mom. I think now, Mom, I'm going to have to keep an eye on that Colts-Patriots game after all. I was planning on kind of skipping that one, but now I'm going to have to keep an eye on it. Got to see how DK's doing in the bankroll bonanza.
Well, nice thing is, because the East Coast, you can do an early supper with Mom and kick off at 8:20 on Thursday night. But, we'll have a Twitter bet for the first time this season. We've talked about it. We came close to doing it. Each of us have come close to doing it a couple times, so this will be the first one, I hope, unless the Colts go in there and lead wire to wire.
I think that's pretty unlikely to think that the Colts would just lead wire to wire. I do agree with you on that. But the $4,000, that definitely got my attention, DK.
There you go. My thought process is if I play it back, it's ultimately only a $400 bet.
Right. If you can play it back, though. That's always the risk.
That is the risk. Do you think this line will move up? First of all, do you think this line will move up closer to game time, get to 11, 11.5, 12?
You know what? There was a lot of 10 out there on the market yesterday. If anything, I think it might come down a little bit, although the public will certainly be on the Patriots here. This is the kind of game where if the Colts can cover, the book is going to do so well because everyone's going to have the Patriots, and a lot of the Colts bets will go to the weekend and parlays and stuff. So sometimes those Thursday night games when the dog wins, the book can really, really clean up.
Okay. All right, man, you're up. Do you have anything?
Yeah, I got one more. I got the homer play. I mentioned it earlier. Redskins plus 6.5 in the Big Easy against the Saints. I do think this number is too high. The Redskins have been very good as a road underdog. New Orleans has looked very vulnerable at home. I think the Redskins will stay within this number, maybe even win this game outright. Monday, I'll just do that for $500.
Oh, so you got a Monday night game.
Monday night football. I'll be there rooting for my Skins, and I'm taking the points here.
I'm going 12 for 12 this weekend, and that includes the Monday night parlay.
You know, I'm no John Anthony. I can't give you the side and the total in the Monday night game. All I can do is the side here. Give me the Redskins.
Okay. Well, it wouldn't be a bonanza without a teaser. So I'm going to go Rams minus one, and I'm going to take the bait with New England minus 4.5. I'm going really low. I'm not confident in this one. I'm only doing 300 here.
So Rams minus one to the Patriots minus 4.5.
Correct.
Okay.
For the minimum. That's still our minimum, right? Okay.
Firm minimum, yes, 300.
All right, my man. Well, safe travels. Again, awesome time this weekend, your sister's wedding, and then to the Big Easy for the Redskins game. And notice I did not tease the Saints there. I could have, but I did not.
You could have, but I don't know. The Redskins have been tough in this spot. This is the kind of spot where they've really shined under Jay Gruden. New quarterback this year at Alex Smith. I think they've got the playmakers on offense to keep this game close, but we shall see, sir.
All right, man. All right, until next week.
All right, take care, Doug.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Mike Clay is going to join us momentarily, but first, a word from one of our sponsors. These days, you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcasts. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. Did you know you can get even postage on demand? All you need is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package. All available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you're done. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale. You can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage every time. Right now, use Betts. For this special offer, 4-week trial includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in bets. That's stamps.com and enter bets.
Talk nerdy to me.
He's back for more. We are borrowing that segment from our friends with the College Football Podcast. We're also borrowing Mike Clay from the Fantasy World. Mike, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. Good to be here.
All right. So, Mike, how did it feel to be on the Behind the Bets podcast, give out some prop bets that you liked, and relay your stats, and then have to watch these games unfold?
It was stressful. I feel like Scott Van Pelt could have done a bad beats on a few of those picks. We came right down to the wire, I think, on three of them and just missed. So I think we did pretty well, but a couple bad beats in there.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. I thought the Mahomes one was a winner. I went on that in one of the games we do here on the podcast, the Baby Bankroll Bonanza. That was a tough loss with the magic, the left-handed magic of Mahomes. And then even some others brutal. Like Ben Roethlisberger. So that's tough. When you're crunching numbers, what adjustments do you make for sort of atypical games like we saw last week?
Yeah, I mean, I think over half of the games will go about as we expect, right? So most guys, you know, the scoring won't get out of hand. It won't be crazy low or crazy high scoring, and the numbers end up pretty close. But you're always going to have those games out of nowhere where it's just out of control. Think about a game like last week where Cleveland goes into Oakland and it ends up a shootout, even though the Browns defense had played well and their offense was on the road traveling to the left coast. You know, you'll have games like that. It's just it's a part of it. It's part of the variance, and you deal with it, and you factor it in best you can, and you move on.
Yeah, it really is. And that's I replied to somebody on Twitter with that you got some heat. I was like, he doesn't have a crystal ball. These are projections. Nothing more.
You got it.
Nothing less. So I wanted to get back on the train this week, and we have some nice high-profile games Thursday, Sunday night, Monday night. We went through the Westgate props as of Wednesday. What jumps out to you?
Yeah, we'll start with Andrew Luck here. Actually, I'm going to focus in on the quarterbacks here. Andrew Luck is at 278.5 passing yards. I'm going to take the slight over there. I have him at 285. He's averaging 282 so far this season with the ninth most pass-centric game script, so not crazy pass-heavy. But they're playing in New England, and I think we all expect the Patriots to build a lead there, which means Andrew Luck will be throwing the football plenty. So, and by the way, their defense has been better than I think people realize. So they could hang in there enough where it's not a blowout, but they're still throwing the football in the third and fourth quarter. So I like the over here a little bit.
What about that blueprint that the Lions demonstrated about all the defensive backs out there doubling Gronk and making the Patriots run the ball? I made the game go under that Sunday night a couple Sundays ago. I wonder if there's some copycat going on where this game might be really fewer possessions and the Pats might run based on the defensive sets they're facing.
Yeah, well, a couple things. I mean, I'm sure Miami wanted to do that too last week, right? And the Patriots gave it to them. So I'm not sure it's really right, that right. Really be that simple. But also, as for doubling receivers, you know, it's a different scenario. This is a very different-looking offense. You have Sony Michel now at running back, first of all, but you have Julian Edelman in his first game back, which is going to give Brady a target maybe 8 to 12 times a game, not to mention Josh Gordon's playing time just continues to increase. That's going to take pressure off of Gronk. It's going to take pressure off of James White and Chris Hogan. So I think the Patriots finally are in position where they're set up, you know, they're set up to really produce, get the ball downfield. And actually, that kind of leads me to my next prop, which is I don't think Brady will throw an interception. You know, it's at minus 125 here. Will he or will he not throw an interception? If you go, yes, it's actually plus 105. I'm going to say no. I mean, he has four picks this season, so that might lean you toward the yes. But you look back at the past few seasons since 2014, he has a 1.3% interception rate. That is best in the NFL. I mentioned Julian Edelman's back, more Josh Gordon. And not to mention, by the way, Doug, the Colts might be without their number one, number two, and number three corners in this game. So that's a secondary that can be exploited, and they're going to have some trouble, I think, attempting to pick off Brady. So I'm going no there.
That's some good intel there. Yeah, Brady, surprisingly, despite the domination, had two picks last week.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't see that one rare.
Coming. I mean, that is super rare, yeah.
Okay, let's stick with this game. Colts, you suggested earlier that they're going to be passing a lot, trailing. What does that mean for their scoring?
Yeah, and this is tough because, you know, the Patriots tend to be a little bit better at home, stifling opposing offenses. But there's a few things I like here about the over 20.5 for the Colts. I have them at 23 points. They're sixth in plays. They're the second pass-heaviest offense so far. They're 13th in touchdowns. And actually, they're 10th if you total up field goal attempts and touchdowns. So in terms of scoring opportunities, they've been there so far. And that was with a slow start for Andrew Luck. You know, and as I mentioned, 23.5 points per game so far. So they're actually well above the line here. They beat 20.5 three out of four games. And the Patriots, by the way, they've allowed 27 total points in two games at home, but they gave up 20 to Houston and 7 to Miami. This is certainly going to be the best quarterback and the best offense they face. I know Deshaun Watson has come along in the past few weeks, but obviously got off to a slow start in his first game. And by the way, the Patriots are allowing a pretty low point total at home since the middle of last season. But if you look at the slate, again, the Colts are one of the best, maybe the best offense they faced during that, certainly the best quarterback they faced during that stint. So I think they can get it done. I think they get over 21 points in this game.
All right, so 20.5 is the prop. You like 23 as your projected point total. Speaking of the Texans, they play Sunday night. Been a really strange year for Houston, but they're hosting Dallas, so a battle of Texas on Sunday night.
Yeah, you kind of have to decide which way you want to go. Do you want to go with Deshaun Watson, who's been red hot, or do you want to go with the Dallas defense that's allowing 208 passing yards a game so far this season, which is sixth best? So the line here on Watson's 288.5. I'm at 252, kind of split in the middle a little bit. He's hit 289, two out of six starts last season, and he's 3 of 4 this year. So he's been over 300 quite a few times, including three in a row. So he's been hot. But history suggests he probably comes in under that number. He also may not have Will Fuller, who's looking kind of doubtful right now. So that's something to keep in mind. Not to mention the Cowboys secondary, their revamp there, especially at corner, has been terrific. Byron Jones looks like a stud on the perimeter, and Anthony Brown is the slot locked down. So this is a tough secondary, one of Watson's bigger challenges so far this season. So I'm going to go with the under 288.5.
All right, we got burned last week with Mahomes, so hopefully no late-game magic in another primetime game. As for Monday night, Guy I like to call Captain Checkdown, at least when he was with the Chiefs. Alex Smith, you're going under as well, and I'm interested in this one, but I'll let you first explain why you like the under 23.5 completions.
Yeah, I have 22.5, so this one's really close, but a few things here. Again, very tight. The game, I think, will be closer than most realize, and we'll get more into that, but the Redskins' defense, especially perimeter corner play, has been very good. I think they have enough talent to keep this close. Alex Smith does avoid turnovers, so I don't think it's going to be the situation where it's a late game and he's throwing the football a ton, kind of like how he got burned by Big Ben last week. It's possible. It's possible that the Saints jump out and he's stuck in garbage time late or throwing a ton of passes. That is a risk you're taking. But keep in mind, Alex Smith has never been over 22.7 completions per game in his career. And the line here is 23.5, and he's at 22 this season. He's been under 23.5 six of his past nine games. So I think the odds are he falls short of this. Again, it's a tough one because you're risking that late game deficit, but we'll get more into here. I think that this game will be closer than people think.
You have projected 22.5, but you think under 23.5. Like, are you just, is that like an opinion, or is one completion significant enough?
I mean, that's the way the projections come in. So that's what the model's showing based on, you know, projected plays per game, projected pass attempts. I'm considering game flow, game script, those kind of things. So that's what shows up. I mean, that's what the model spits out in this scenario. But this is a tough one. This is probably the riskiest one of the bunch, I think.
Okay. Well, you said that this game you anticipate being a little closer than you would imagine. So you have Breeze and Kamara also going under.
Yeah, I do. The line on Breeze here is passing yards, 300.5. I have met 280 in this one. Remember, you have Mark Ingram coming back in this game. As mentioned, Redskins' perimeter defense has been good. They have there's an underrated football team. You're going to have, I think it's unlikely to be a shootout. And by the way, Redskins' defense, 5.4 yards per attempt so far allowed. That's a crazy low number. And the quarterbacks they faced, I mean, Sam Bradford, okay. You can understand that one. But also Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers. And still, 5.4 yards per attempt allowed. Those passing yardage totals, 153, 179, and 265. And, Breeze has fallen well short of 300 yards in two of three games this season. He's been under 314 of his past 18 games and six of his past nine at home. So he hasn't really been getting to 300 as much as you think. And again, with Ingram back, maybe the game script changes back to a little bit more, or the game plan changes to a little bit more running. So that there's Breeze. As for Kamara, he's at 66.5 rushing yards. I've met 55. Again, his totals this season, he's coming off 134 yards, but his other three were 29, 46, and 66. And in fact, he's fallen short of this line, 66.5, in seven straight games to end last season. He's only hit 66. He only hit 66 four times last season. As mentioned, Mark Ingram is back in the fold now. And he out-carried Kamara 249 and 141, including the playoffs last season. So I think there's a lot of reasons to go under on Kamara here. I like this one a lot.
You know, it's very painful to bet under in Saints games across the board. Point total, game total. I mean, their explosive potential really makes it an unfun sweat.
Yeah, and by the way, I tweeted this the other day. I had help from our stats and information department. Week four was the third highest scoring week in the NFL on a per-team basis since 1970. I mean, so you kind of want to pivot back to the unders because the offenses have been through the roof, and you would imagine it's probably going to come back to earth a little bit in the upcoming weeks. At least that's what history suggests.
So you're saying it's going to be a regression to the mean, whereas I'm kind of in the camp where this is a trend, only because we saw this about 10 years ago with the player safety penalties.
Yeah, I am. I think it'll come back down a little bit. It's crazy. I mean, you look at last year, we were at 2.2 offensive touchdowns per game per team. We're at 2.58 right now. That is an insane increase, and it's well off the radar of, even trending up over the past decade. This is like jumping way off the map. So
okay.
I could see it being a record-setting year, but I think it's going to come down, and I think that's reason for a little bit pessimism with projections right now.
I don't know, man. I really think players are just that much better. There's obviously rules that are conducive to the offense, but I think quarterbacks are just that much more advanced. Look, in the past, we saw – rookie QBs had to sit on the bench. They weren't ready. Now look at all of them. you know, making the adjustment just fine. But that's just my opinion. But to your point, this would be a strong spike.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm gonna be in the we're gonna come back to Earth camp a little bit, and we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, the under has not gone so hot so far, certainly in betting the games.
All right, man. Well, thank you for all your insight and your perspective. Job well done last week, and let's keep it rolling.
All right, let's do it. Thanks a lot, Doug.
You got it.
Talk nerdy to me.
That wraps up another Behind the Bets podcast. Thanks to everyone for listening in, and thanks to Mike Clay and John Murray for joining me. Obviously a busy week for Murray and his family, so nice of him to make time for us given all the personal demands. So Mike with the prop bets as well, and we'll see what happens with this New England wager. Obviously everyone needs to check out Twitter if they want to monitor what the playback number is, hoping there is a playback. If not, well, we'll have to crawl out of that hole. So Kai, download, rate, and review. That's what we ask everyone to do on the podcast.
Correctamundo.
And you know, Kai, I think we forgot to tell you, if we both win, then you owe us each the 10 grand that we invested in the baby bankroll bonanza.
Yeah, you'll definitely get that on the back end.
Okay.
From a back channel some way.
Yeah, somehow. It's in the fine print. I'm just not sure if you saw that one. Okay, good stuff for everyone listening. Again, Wednesday's college football, Thursday's NFL, and obviously Stanford Steve and the Bear over on their own podcast. Stanford Steve and the Bear. Download, rate, and review everywhere for all of us. We'll catch you back here next week on the Behind the Bets podcast.